For decades, critic Tom Carson has written on TV and popular culture for The Village Voice, Esquire, Rolling Stone, and other magazines and newspapers. He's written a new novel called Gilligan's Wake, which draws heavily on his informed infatuation with classic television series, American history, and world literature. Book critic Maureen Corrigan says Gilligan's Wake may be one of those novels you'd like to have with you on a desert island.
I'm always curious about the current state of cultural literacy, so I went into my freshman English classes the other day and asked how many students had ever watched the 1960s sitcom Gilligan's Island. They all raised their hands instantly. Then I told them about Tom Carson's new novel, Gilligan's Wake, which in bebop, stream-of-consciousness fashion retells highlights of modern American history through the voices of each of the characters on the island. A few faint smiles of appreciation, but unlike the reaction I got when I told the same plot synopsis to friends age 35 and over, no out-and-out hoots of laughter at the absurdity of the whole idea. My students, I realized, have only watched Gilligan's Island on the classic TV channel. For them, it's a canonized text, as venerable in its own way as The Great Gatsby, The Day of the Locust, No Exit, Finnegan's Wake, or any of the other highbrow works Carson references throughout his hectic tale. Their relative lack of elitist distinctions makes my students Carson's ideal readers, because he also assumes that the boundaries are porous between high and low culture. Such is the surrealistic quality of American life, according to Carson's novel. Reading Gilligan's Wake and being the beneficiary of a high culture egghead education, I couldn't help but think of the original title of James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake, which was Here Comes Everybody. Here Comes Everybody aptly captures the feel of Carson's novel. It's an inspired, mumbo-jumbo, manic homage to the art of both James Joyce and Bob Denver. Gilligan's Wake is structured as a series of autobiographical reflections by the ill-fated passengers and crew of the USS Minnow. The novel opens with Maynard G. Krebs, the beatnik character Bob Denver played on his first TV show, The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis, ranting in the Mayo Clinic's Cleaver Ward to his shrink, Dr. Kildare F. Troop. Holden Caulfield, by the way, is Krebs's roommate. From Krebs's paranoid rantings, he's seen the best minds of his generation destroyed by madness, J. Edgar Hoover, and too much espresso. We go on to the skipper's adventures during World War II with McHale's Navy and JFK's PT-109. Then it's back in time to the rarefied youth of Thurston Howell III, who unknowingly launches an old school chum, Alger Hiss, on his dubious government career. The professor, here a bisexual narcissist, works on the Manhattan Project. Party girl Ginger recalls her one-night stand for racial equality with Sammy Davis Jr., and Marianne loses her all-American virginal view of the world, hobnobbing with Sartre in existentialist-infested Paris. My favorite chapter, however, is the one presided over by Lovey Howell, a character who, even on the original TV show, always seemed to be smarter than she acted. After all, she was the only character who packed enough trunks of clothes in anticipation of possible shipwreck. In Carson's fevered imagination, Lovey is a former flapper, a morphine-popping intimate friend, and I do mean intimate, of Daisy Buchanan. Here's Daisy confessing to Lovey her ambition to write a tell-all novel about Jay Gatsby. It would be about a man that everybody thinks is wonderful because his dreams soar so high and he's so full of ardor and he loves his idea of you so much more than the reality of you, which nobody else thinks deserves love anyway. And how nobody understands that this man is a tyrant and a dictator who carries your head around on a stick, even though he calls it his banner. Because he's in love with himself, but he can never admit that, and so he makes you his idol and loves himself, adores himself, worships himself for having one. I have to admit, as many times as I've read The Great Gatsby, that view of Gatsby as an overbearing emotional bully with boundary problems never occurred to me. But aided by Lovey's astute interjections and asides to Virginia Woolf and Betty Friedan, this clever, if repugnant, revisionary interpretation works. Despite its ambitions to make a big statement about America, the word plays the thing in Gilligan's wake. If you like reading Joyce and Eliot, enjoy the self-satisfaction of catching references, riffs, and anagrams, this language-drunk novel is for you. If you have no patience for relentlessly illusory writing, well, to paraphrase the immortal theme song of Gilligan's Island, Gilligan's Wake will be an uphill climb.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Salad, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, Monique Nazareth, Patty Leswing, Ian Chillog, and Jessica Chu. Henry Baldonado directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.